Welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. We're back after a bit longer break than usual. We had 3 weeks off due to the Memorial Day holiday and just to keep our twice a month schedule. In the past, we haven't had a completely regular schedule for publishing these podcasts, and we're going to change that now. Going forward, you can expect Legal Marketing Radio to come out on the second and fourth Thursday of every month. So that'll keep us on our twice a month schedule for those months when there are 5 weeks in the month, which we eventually ran into, as we probably should have anticipated from the get-go. This week on the podcast, we've got kind of a fast and furious episode for you that's actually broken up into two segments. In the first part of the episode, we're going to talk with LaFleur content director Dave Vandewaar about how to create better calls to action that really draw in potential clients and get you those form fills and those conversions, you know, that turn into cases, which is really what you want to see. Then, for the second part of this week's episode, we're going to talk with Chip LaFleur about his recent experiences at the Vista Consulting Conference in Chicago. So we're going to get Chip's reactions to the conference, find out what he learned, and figure out whether it's something you need to consider attending next year. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, if you're not already familiar with LaFleur Marketing, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to deliver holistic, data-driven marketing solutions that grow their businesses. To learn more about us, just go online and visit our website at LaFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. We've got tons of great resources there for you, including past episodes of this podcast, helpful blog articles, and even an in-depth ebook that you can use to really flesh out your fundamental understanding of digital marketing for law firms. Okay, without any further ado, let's get to the content you want to hear in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. Okay, so here in the podcast studio this week, we have one of our favorite guests, LaFleur content director Dave Vandewaar. How are you doing today, Dave?
Pretty good. How are you, Stephen?
Good. I'm doing great. So what we want to talk about on the podcast this week is calls to action, or as we call them in marketing, CTAs. When I say calls to action, I don't mean like tally-ho or Avengers Assemble or anything like that. Calls to action are really important in marketing, and what they are is it's the piece at the end of your content of any type, whether it's a web page or a direct mail marketing or anything. It's the component that tells your reader or your audience what you want them to do, whether it's contact us now or, you know, send money here or call this number. So it's really the instruction you give to them. It's what you're building up to through your content. You know, you're trying to inspire trust, give them information with your content, and then it all leads to the CTA where you tell them what action they need to take. And CTAs, I think, often get overlooked a little bit for a number of reasons. One thing, because they go at the end of content. And so when you're writing content, you know, if you do it all in one sitting, by the end, you're kind of like, okay, whatever. Let's just, you know, contact us now. You know what to do. The other reason, I think, is because they're kind of one of those things that seem straightforward on the surface. You know, what could really go into it? You tell the person what you want to do. You know, when you see a web page, it says, contact us now, fill out this form. So a CTA is as simple as just saying what you want to say, right? Contact us, fill out the form, visit this page, follow this link, whatever. So I could see someone saying, well, what is there to talk about? You know, that's what you do. So maybe I'll open it up by going to you, Dave. Do you think CTAs are really that simple?
I think calls to action are, they're sort of a big part of a larger ecosystem. And I would say there's a lot of competing factors going on when you're looking at a call to action for a specific like blog post or a specific landing page. And those, they're going to appear in different contexts. So on your blog post, for example, it's native on your website. So all of the stuff that's all around on your website, whether it's a sidebar with a form or like the, you know, call us now headline at the top and your, you know, in your margins or in your header.
So the stuff that's on your page theme is
right.
Help you
like
out there.
All of that's sort of competing with any call to action that you're going to have in the content itself, unless, you know, you see it somewhere like on an AMP page where it's you know, more stripped down and pared down. There isn't quite as much noise on a page like that. And so your calls to action come out a little bit stronger. So it's important to think of your call to action in the context of that larger sort of ecosystem on the page. And that readers are also going to be sort of distracted by those other calls to action. So if you want something to come across, something that's really important, the action that you want people for sure to take, that's something you want to make consistent in all those different places, and especially at the end of your blog posts or your web pages.
Got it. Does that include consistent verbiage as to what you're telling them to do, like how you're phrasing it, basically?
I would say so, yeah. Obviously, you want to have consistent like numbers in one place and another. You don't want to have one number at the top of your page because it's your vanity number, and then one page at the bottom of your blog post because they're, or one number at the bottom of your blog post that's different because it's your local number or something like that. That's going to inspire a little bit of mistrust, like, well, which number should I call, or is this even the same place? Or so yeah, consistent in a lot of different ways, but I think the verbiage too should be similar.
Got it. So you write plenty of CTAs. I mean, you don't, since you're the content director, you used to be kind of an everyday writer. Now you do a little more editing and oversight, but you still write plenty of content. Mm-hmm. And you write lots of CTAs. So when you're composing a CTA, what kind of things do you think about? And, what about the audience are you thinking about and looking to connect with when you write them?
Yeah, I think you said it just now. I think what you want to do is you want to have that call to action connect with your audience in the same way that the content has connected. You don't want a unrelated call to action that doesn't make any sense with your content that you just presented. What you want to do is you want to think about the structure of your piece, because the structure of your piece fundamentally should lead to that very compelling call to action. Like, you present a problem and then explain how, at least in the legal world, like how your firm can solve that problem for them. And then your call to action is, hey, please contact our firm, or please set up a consultation. Because now they know what the problem is, they know what the solution is, and now they need to take action on that. And you can sort of set up the structure of a piece to lead with force into a call to action. And you don't want just like the same boilerplate every time. You might have some boilerplate templated language that's very specific to the call to action, but you don't want to just have "call us now" at the end of every single one of your blog posts.
Right, and that's something that's easy to do, because when you turn a lot of content, and a website generally for a law firm will have, especially if they have an active blog and all the kind of components that we recommend, there's a surprising amount of content there. So especially mm-hmm. when something like CTAs, where you feel like you're saying the same thing, it's easy to just kind of copy and paste and reuse things, right? But that's not going to be effective for people, especially if they're taking a deep dive in your site and looking at multiple pages. They're going to start glossing over that section. And even beyond that, you just need to think about, your different practice areas have different audiences. The people who will visit different parts of your, not every part of your site is tailored to the same audience. So you want to think about who's going to be viewing it and what they're going to be looking for, from an attorney, what kind of questions they might have when you're crafting a CTA.
Definitely. You'd see that very clearly on something like a family lawyer. A family lawyer might have their fingers in a lot of different practice areas. Some of them would be for younger people in their 20s and 30s who are maybe going through their first divorce, or maybe trying to handle like custody issues with kids. But they might also handle like estate law and, wills and trusts and things like that, which maybe would happen for an audience that's older.
Definitely. So now that people have an idea, how to kind of think about their audience and what kind of concerns, go into writing a good CTA, I'm going to share some ideas I came up with based on my own experience and research to upgrade CTAs, make your CTAs stronger and get you think about what you can do with them to kind of play with them a little bit. And so, Dave, feel free to chime in here anywhere you think of anything you want to say or to give feedback on these ideas. One of the first things I came up with, and I think this is probably, as a writer, one that appeals to me and that I think about a lot, is just using strong verbs that indicate action. And there's a lot of data to back this up too, that the verbs you use can really affect the conversion rates of your CTA. One that I came across is a case study from Unbounce, where they used in a CTA the phrase "get information" and the phrase "or request information." And the phrase "get information" led to a 38% increase in conversions over request. And I think that makes, that applies to a lot of attorney blogs because, or attorney websites, because a lot of times the action that you want them to take is to get a free consultation. But I feel like it's often, I even probably do this a lot, phrase it, click here to request your free consultation. Well, request isn't really a strong verb. You're asking the person to make a request. And so it's like in their mind, okay, I'm making a request. Are they going to follow up? Like it's kind of a passive thing. So if you just change it to, click here to get your free consultation now, this is something you're entitled to, you have to just click here to get it. I think that's kind of the example of the kind of stronger phrasing that can help you out and really increase the conversion rate on a CTA.
Yeah, or even skip the click here, right? We know these sort of cliches that people already, they expect them, right? Click here, submit. A lot of those calls to action just don't work anymore because they've been so overdone. Everyone expects a click here. Everyone expects a submit. And so you have to sort of get their attention at the end as well. And so, you know, using some really concise verbiage, like maybe a get, you know, something that they're actively going to be doing, probably does help with conversions.
Yep, or receive your free consultation now.
Schedule anything your free
that
consultation. Just kind
of, anything that puts it in their hands a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Another tip that I had that, you know, again, a lot of data to back up that this produced results is just to keep your CTAs short and clean. And the general guideline is under 150 characters. And so I think this makes sense, you know, if you're the things we were just talking about, like, you know, schedule your free consultation. You just don't want to get into a long-winded, you know, schedule your free consultation, you know, with us now with no strings attached and meet with, you know, just don't ramble on, get to the point. You've already given them a lot of information at this point that they've, you know, had to process. And you really want to just cut to the quick with a CTA. And I think that, you know, is probably good advice.
This also speaks to the importance of having a funnel as well. You know, your call to action in a blog post might not be, like, someone looking at a blog post that's informative might not be necessarily interested in getting a consultation right now. They might just be learning about their issue very early on in the sort of sales cycle. So they're sort of gathering information right now. What you might want to do is have them redirected to other, you know, posts that are related to the same issue, and that'll get them again gathering more information, learning more about your firm.
Absolutely. So understanding that customer journey.
Right. Exactly. And then once they land on somewhere that's more further along the funnel, like maybe one of your practice area pages, then that call to action maybe becomes, okay, you know about your issue. Here's what we can do to solve your issue on the practice area page, and here's what you need to do to make that happen.
Yeah. Definitely. So another tip that I came across, and this is an interesting one, and this is an example of something that I learned while, you know, kind of coming up with ideas for this podcast. I would not have thought this. Once again, the marketing company Unbounce did some A/B testing on multiple CTAs, and they used the article my instead of your, and they found that my actually performed better pretty much across the board, with a variance between like 25% better in terms of producing conversions and even 90% better. So the example would be, you know, a button that says, instead of schedule your free consultation now, it says schedule my free consultation now. So just having that, you know, first person language for whatever reason is more compelling to people. You know, it's like, maybe it's implanting it in their mind or whatever as kind of their own thought. I'm not, you know, you could formulate some theories as to why, but, you know, that simple just change of article, they found it across the board, across CTAs, different pages, many different contexts. And that's one I didn't know. And I haven't done that too much. So I may try to change some of my own CTAs to kind of try that out. Another interesting tip is to include CTAs on banners near the top of the page. This also increased conversions and a lot of A/B testing. I think obviously this most applies to dedicated landing pages, I think. But even, you know, rearranging some aspects of your site so that the banner of the page you're on has some sort of a CTA component, you know, like, you know, schedule your or my, if you want to go that way, initial consultation now, in a more prominent fashion, maybe featured under the image. So, you know, you have to work with your page a little bit. It depends on the context. But that's another strategy that can increase some conversions.
And CTAs might be different as people move through a page, depending on the type of content. If it's long form content, you may have, like, you notice this when you read news articles and stuff like that online, you'll see little interstitials where the copy breaks up and it's just a link to another blog post about a similar topic. Those kind of CTAs in line in your content can be very effective to moving people around on your site and getting them where they want to go. Whereas the call to action on, like you said, like a landing page might be very different.
Yeah, that's a great point. So context is everything. Here's another one that I really liked. And this is honestly something I hadn't really thought of before, but I think it's a great idea. Incorporate client testimonials into your CTA. So we always harp on the value of attorneys including client testimonials on your site. If you have a good base of client testimonials, maybe instead of writing a typical CTA, you know, we're here for you, contact us now and schedule your free consultation, the typical things we see. Maybe you take a little bit of a client testimonial, you know, a quick quote from a client, and then underneath that you write, you know, see for yourself the X law firm experience now, you know, or, you know, find out why our clients say these things about us. And so that's not something I've done very much of, and I'm very interested to try that out in my CTAs. I think that's, you know, having that other voice that's not yours backing you up is really powerful, I think.
For sure. And, you know, taking that even one step further, including different types of content with brand testimonials is always a great idea, whether that's an image of somebody who has had a successful case or even a video, you know, a client video where they talk about your firm or, yeah, those things are all great.
Absolutely. Video is so powerful. So that's a great idea. Another tip, and I like this one because this kind of, I think, really ties in well to law firm websites. The tip is to focus on the benefits rather than the lack of risks that you're offering to the person. And I think this is something that attorney websites are really kind of, I don't want to say guilty of, but are prone to, is focusing on the lack of risk that you're offering, you know? So schedule your free initial consultation with us. It's free. There's no risks. It's contingent fee. You know, you just really drive that home. But that's not really a compelling reason as to why the person, you know, you want them to take the action. I mean, it's focusing on the lack of downside, but you also have to sell them the upside. So, you know, instead of every single page, you know, talk with us now. There's no risk. You won't owe anything. Try, you know, just saying, talk with an experienced lawyer today by doing this. Especially because if you think about a client journey for, you know, someone who's going to hire a lawyer, they're probably going to speak to quite a few different attorneys or at least look at, you know, quite a few different attorneys' web pages. And they're going to figure out fairly quickly that all the attorneys are going to offer free initial consultations, right, especially like in the personal injury area, you know? So you do have to remember that's not really a differentiating factor for you. And a client who's been doing the research is going to know this. It doesn't mean that you don't put it on the page anywhere, but maybe it's not necessarily part of your final call to action. You know, maybe you focus on, you know, speak to a knowledgeable and experienced attorney today by calling this, and that's your call to action. So I thought that was really interesting because I see so much of that risk mitigation kind of copy on attorney websites. And finally, I think the most important tip of all, and it really supersedes any kind of blanket rule or strategy that you could give, and I think it's just the value of A/B testing. And we've talked about this before, but you know, we can't really say for sure what's going to work for your audience and what's going to work on your webpage, at least not to a degree that real empirical data, you know, can compete with that. So the most important thing, I think, is to try different CTAs. You know, try A and B versions of a page and see how different CTAs perform and which ones get higher conversion rates. All the tips that I mentioned before, you know, came out of that kind of A/B testing from marketing companies and from our own experience too. So I think just gathering that data and looking at it yourself and applying it is really probably the most important tip of all.
Yeah, data is huge. You know, all of our intuitions are notoriously terrible, even with years of experience in marketing or years of experience working with clients or whatever. Your intuitions are just bad about what real people in a real situation are going to like more or going to consider compelling. And so unless you've got data to back that up, you're really just guessing.
Yeah.
No matter how experienced you are.
Yeah, I don't want to say don't follow your instincts, but check them with data. Keep them honest, you know.
Yeah.
Trust but verify.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got to wrap up this segment of the podcast, but thanks so much for building with us, Dave. And we're happy to have you again. We'll hope to see you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Thanks. All right. That's it for the first part of this episode, but don't go anywhere because we're going to go right back to the podcast studio to catch up with Chip LaFleur to get his reactions to the recent Vista Consulting Conference in Chicago. Chip's going to give us a lowdown on what this conference is all about and what it has to offer for law firms as well as legal marketers. So let's get started now with part two of this week's episode. Okay, so here in the podcast studio for our second segment of this episode, we have one of our frequent and most favorite guests, LaFleur, founder and president, Chip LaFleur. How are you, Chip?
I'm good, Stephen. Thanks.
Great. So this week, we want to kind of talk about the Vista Consulting Conference in Chicago and just a little context for this episode. The plan was that Chip and I were both going to attend the Vista Conference, which takes place in Chicago. It happened mid last month, so mid-May. And we were both going to go down toward the end of the week, check it out, see the city, and then come back and kind of reflect on the conference and what we learned. That plan went a little bit awry when I got violently ill just before I was supposed to leave for the conference. So I wasn't able to attend. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to kind of have Chip catch me up and by extension catch you guys up on what the conference is all about and what he learned while he was there. So Chip, maybe you can give me just a little background about what the Vista Conference is all about and how you found out about it.
Yeah, so the Vista Conference is put together by Vista Consulting, and they're a group of people who work with law firms to help them just provide a better service, measure the work that they're doing, become more efficient, and really run their business like a business. Because a lot of lawyers go in, they want to be great lawyers, and some of them know how to run a business to some degree, but it's almost like the secondary purpose of becoming a lawyer and running a law firm. But the reality is it's a business, and there's efficiencies that can be found. And so they put together a group to help do that. One of the principals is an attorney, one of the partners at Dudley DeBrazier down in New Orleans, and then also a CPA who's been working with law firms for years and years. So they've been able to really get a window into how a firm operates by looking at a lot of different firms. They've been able to identify efficiencies that can be found in reporting metrics that can be tracked to really check the health of a firm, and then help the firm run better. And in making a firm run better, they're not just doing a service for the lawyers at that firm, they're doing a service to the clients too. Because when the firm is more efficient, it gets better results, it handles cases as they should be handled, it flags cases that deserve and require more time and attention, and then those get handled by the right people. So they've been running their conference for quite a few years now. I'm not sure exactly how long it's been around, but a client of mine invited me to last year's conference, and so I went and got to know these guys, and I've been to a lot of conferences through the years, and oftentimes those conferences are just kind of a sales pitch. So mm-hmm. you pay to go to a conference to get a sales pitch for something that they're trying to sell you on. The Vista conference is different. It's more actionable material. And so people will often say when they leave a conference, you know, if I can just get two or three things that I can apply to my practice, I'll consider it worthwhile. But the Vista conference, I feel like you get, you know, a basket of things that you can implement. And if you take good notes, if you have the right people at that conference, then you can really put to use some of the experience that they've compiled through working with so many different firms. And so then they invited me to just come this time as a guest. And so, you know, I think they were eager to kind of get our take because they know that we appreciate the work that they're doing.
Also, Vista was actually extended the invitation this time.
Yeah, so we've gotten to be quite familiar with their work because one of our clients works with them. We've recommended them to some of our clients, actually, and we've done some promotion of their methods, basically, in their conferences, not because we're paid to do it or anything like that, but just because it's worthwhile information that I think is good for our clients and good for the legal community. So they were aware of that, and then because of that, they invited us to attend.
That makes so much sense, too, because so much of the time, you know, when we take on a new client, a lot of what we stress to them is the value of, you know, a more systematic approach, the value of, you know, data and having systems in place. And, you know, for a lot of firms, you know, they come in with the legal knowledge. That's kind of their first focus is the practice of law, the litigation. But it is a business, and you know, getting those practices in place, I think, is a big challenge for a lot of small firms.
For sure, and then measuring their success or failure too. If you don't have that systematic approach, then you don't have the measurements to give you that answer.
So, what were some of the key themes that this year's conference touched on, and some of the key presentations that you saw while you were there?
Yeah, so on a big picture level, it really touches on multiple facets of running a firm. The program started with some commentary on kind of the state of plaintiff firms and a dissection of some of the trends that we're seeing. And so, you know, they dove right into client communication and how important that is. And it's something that a lot of attorneys kind of view as a chore instead of a privilege. But then, you know, big picture, what are some of the changes that we're seeing coming? Self-driving cars, they're coming. They're going to disrupt the legal industry. Public ownership of law firms is happening. And so what does a current firm have to do to kind of brace themselves for those changes? And so it really kind of started off on kind of this forward-looking approach. And then we dove kind of right into the nitty-gritty of things that you could do in your practice. And so, you know, from there they talked about effective attorney meetings. We all go into meetings and think, this is a huge waste of my day. You know, it's really easy to go in, have a meeting, not feel like you accomplished anything. So, you know, really getting into the nuance of even something that seems small that actually has a big impact. Managing the money in a firm, you know, what resources are out there that are available to do things like that. What does the marketing of a firm look like? What are some of the tools that are available there? What's the measurement that can be had by things like that? And then some time spent looking at how to hire people, you know, how to hire the right fit, what tools are out there that are available, what processes are in use that they've seen work most effectively. And then so moving on, then Chad Dudley actually went on and he talked about how to double your average fee. And it requires a little bit deeper dive into an analysis of how you're running your business. And it kind of walks you through the path of identifying profit centers in the business that could very easily be missed. And then also taking a look at the process of how you value a case in the first place. And so they talk about what they use is what they call it is a Pareto point system. And so they assign a score basically when a case comes in, an A, B, or C case. And if it's a C case, it kind of goes over into the more process heavy side of things and to get worked as effectively as possible. But there's probably an upper limit on what that return is going to be, what that case is going to settle for. And then if it's an A case, then it's the kind of case that you'd put your trial lawyers on, you know, the people who are really going to take that case and they're going to maximize the value of that case. Because the finding is that, you know, cases that are settling for insurance minimums, that's probably all that there is to settle for. You know, there's not an additional source of funding. There's not an additional liable party. And so that's 80% of the work, but 80% of the fees are going to come in from that top 20%. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that are sustainable that you can grow, and that's a scalable part of the business. You know, so if you can identify those cases as early as possible and as quickly as possible, then what you can do is bring your average fees up across the board, because then you're spending the real attorney time diving into the more challenging cases that are probably going to have a significantly higher payout at the end of them. And so Chad ran through what that process looks like for them, what they look for, what the elements are, how those meetings contribute to that, you know, how to push that valuation up internally by leveraging the people who have a higher degree of risk tolerance with the people who want to be absolutely certain that something's going to work, and really maximizing the strengths of everybody that's involved in that organization. So it's a great way to wrap up those 2 days to leave with something that you could go back with and say, here's how we're going to do this, and then see a significant increase in your bottom line.
Yeah, I think that's what every attorney we work with really wants at the end of the day, right? That's, you know, one of the first questions we always get asked, what is this going to do for my bottom line? So to come away with those actionable kind of steps that you can use to, you know, increase your revenue, that sounds like, you know, every client of ours' dream. So overall, Vista Conference, your review, something you recommend to our clients and to other legal marketers? Do you think it has value for people in both fields?
I think that it does. And that's what we have recommended it to our clients. And it's not something we say to every single client that we have. You know, it makes sense for trial lawyers, for plaintiff's attorneys. It makes a lot less sense for attorneys who work in other practice areas. But I think it is something that people should consider going to. And then if everything that they go through there makes sense, you know, then they could potentially take it on to the kind of the next level, which is engaging with Vista and having them come in and help them build out some of these things. But, you know, it's going to be pretty common for the clients that we work with, as well as other attorneys out there, to want to go to some of these conferences to meet other people, you know, meet their peers, and to learn things. I think this is one of the best ones to go to, actually, because you take home actionable insights that you can apply to your business.
Very cool. And just to be clear, we have no financial relationship with Vista. You know, you've met them as colleagues, but, you know, we're not getting any kickback for this review. So this is Chip's impartial review. We're glad to have it. All right, Chip, we appreciate you coming on and sharing with us your thoughts and reflections about the Vista Conference. So just once again, the Vista Consulting Conference, it's an annual event. The location varies. It's usually held around May or June each year. And so keep an eye out for it next year. All right. Thanks for coming on the podcast this week, Chip. We're always glad to have you.
Thanks, Stephen.
See you next time. Okay. That's it for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. As always, we want to thank you for joining us. And if you got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just feel free to send us an email at radio@lafleur.marketing. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another deep dive into the legal marketing world. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from Lafleur.